Welcome to the 5Cs podcast. I'm your host, Charlene Norman, and this is where we talk all things clarity and collaboration for the community of climate change makers. Today, we're beginning a whole new series. And I'm not saying that everything we dive into is entirely right or wrong. I merely ask you to think back over the last several decades of your life and see if your experience lines up the same way as ours. And if it does, then join us on the highway known as What If? Have you ever stopped and thought about how on earth we got to where we are today? Trust me, I have, and it doesn't always form a straight line back to pre-social media or even pre-internet days. For example, I recently traced back type 2 diabetes and obesity. Do you know that just 200 years ago, the average Western diet contained 6 pounds of sugar per year? These days, that 6 pounds is now 130 pounds. Do you know that it was only in the 1970s that bigger became better and supersized portions came into being? Let me put it another way. We used to eat about 2,000 calories of food a day in the early 70s. These days, that intake is now 2,900 calories a day, and I'm going to steer clear of how inactive we've become in the same time frame. Thank goodness for Big Pharma, always there for us with new pills and different injections for us to maintain our lifestyle without changing our behavior. From a purely business point of view, I'd say that marketing and advertising, as it relates to food, to body image, to weight loss and well-being, has grown exponentially because more profit is always the end goal. And against that backdrop, I want to look into the effectiveness of marketing and advertising as it relates to climate change. How did that come to the forefront and how did it change our behaviors? I found the perfect guest. He's steeped in all things marketing and also has a psychology degree. Even better, he was not part of the Mad Men universe. He's young, he's dispassionate about the way things used to be, and he brings the human perspective. John Gorman is an award-winning brand strategist, writer, speaker, and creative director based in Puerto Rico. He is the founder and CEO of Cache, a boutique corporate brand consultancy that merges strategy and storytelling, and he's also served as ghostwriter and copywriter for 2 Take No BS ladies in the U.S. government. You might have heard of them. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Jasmine Crockett. John's details are in the show notes. In this series, John will share a couple of stories behind why climate change and weaning from fossil fuels hasn't been nearly as successful as hoped, how marketing and advertising are becoming less and less effective these days, and he's going to provide some suggestions on what we might consider to do better. I asked him to tell me about recycling and how it came into being.
I kind of want to take you on this trip of the patient zero of greenwashing. Perfect, because that's where we're going. About 75, 80 years ago, late 1940s, post-war U.S., cars are everywhere. So is roadside garbage. And so there's this, for the American Ad Council, so I know you're Canadian, and for our global listeners here, the American Ad Council is this organization that creates PSAs, public service announcements, which are these types of ads for a whole host of organizations that funded by either corporate interests or a public-private partnership of some kind. And so, you know, there's this guy who's writing copy who needs this catchy term for people who throw trash out of their car. And he decided to riff off of a name of a popular dance at the time, which was called the jitterbug. And that's how we got the term litterbug. Now, you would think litterbug. You've heard of it, right?
Yes.
You've heard the word.
Sure.
So we're gonna talk about litterbugging. So he writes that. It appears in an ad, and it would have at the time been relegated to this landfill of cute one-off ad copy, the same way you or I would write a pun and put it in a line of copy. But there was a corporate-funded organization called Keep America Beautiful. And that org comes along a little later. So it's 1953. Trash is still everywhere, surprise. And people can see it from their cars and along city streets. And so to combat this growing litter crisis, the U.S. state of Vermont becomes the first in the nation to pass a law implementing a mandatory corporate tax, for lack of a better term for it, that needs to be paid at the point of purchase on disposable beverage containers. So anything that you buy in a store that's like in an aluminum can or a glass bottle or a plastic bottle, every time you get this, corporation has to pay like 5 cents per bottle or per unit or per can. And the American Can Company and Owens, Illinois, which later became Owens Corning, which later became, you know, a host of other larger corporations, needed some good PR, right? Because there's these initiatives in, you know, passed in Vermont, states all over the union that want to pass these. Well, if corporations are going to be putting things in disposable bottles and it's going to become trash, we essentially want them to pay to clean it up. And so they said, well, hold on, we're going to fix this. So Keep America Beautiful joins the Ad Council in 1961. And immediately after, they start pumping out all these anti-litter PSAs, public service announcements, right? Like all these billboards and all these radio ads and TV ads and print ads, essentially saying that you should not be littering. And they're like, oh God, we need a catchy term to like really make this initiative stick. And so they dug up the term litterbug and started weaponizing it as this sort of catch-all insult to use it to shame people who don't pick up their garbage, who throw things away. And so the con here is that they framed this environmental destruction as an individual moral failing, rather than as the waste product of 100 companies in a smokestack trench coat who account for 70% of all pollution.
That is very, very smart, isn't it? From a corporate point of view, blame the consumer.
Yeah, it's mitigating risk while subsidizing profit, right? So 10 years later, right, there's Earth Day. That becomes a thing, right? Earth Day is this, it was not a real holiday, it became one. So 1971, a Keep America Beautiful public service announcement shows a Native American man who is called Iron Eyes Cody, who, fun fact, not Native American, just a Sicilian actor from Louisiana playing one on TV. That's a whole other story. My God, that's an entirely different grift, but that's super, it's wild what people used to get away with. So in this very popular ad, they show him paddling through polluted waters. He's arriving at this shore that has trash all over it, and this single tear rolls down his cheek, right? And it says, like, people can start pollution. People can stop it. right? It's this iconic ad that wins Clio's and airs over a billion times on American television and radio. And it was a total con. That ad was paid for by Pepsi, Coke, Philip Morris, and Anheuser-Busch. And those same companies, all of them were in this Keep America Beautiful pack that was behind the back of this ad, lobbying state governments and the federal government to kill bills banning single-use packaging in the United States. So all these bills that they had being like, well, hold on, if you're going to put something in a liquid, or it's got to be in a reusable container. They said, no. We're going to keep doing this. And also, we're going to shame consumers for throwing these away. And so instead, what they did was they created these recycling initiatives at the municipal level all around the country. They made those popular while calling people litter bugs. And so what it ended up doing was it weaponized shame to preserve the status quo. And instead of bottle bans, we got recycling bins. And so litter bug, you know, if you think about the way we use the term carbon footprint today, litter bug crawled so that term could run. And from that moment, you know, for that through line from the invention of the term litter bug through today, where the onus is on the individual consumer to recycle, shame was the thing that got us from that point to now. And that's how we got here.
Shame is one of those incredible emotions that all humans respond to. I'm not going to say they respond well. I'm not going to say they respond poorly. But it is an easy emotion to get under the skin of all humans. And I think that this has been an exceptionally hot potato that has been pushed as far away from the manufacturers and the creators of the products as possible. And it's all behavior of consumers who have been led down the garden path.
Yeah. The way in which I see this going, because we see this in more than just recycling. We see this in a host of, you know, other things. If you think about substance abuse, if we think of mental health, if we think of all of these systemic problems that we try and solve using individual initiatives, or putting the onus on the individual to solve systemic issues, it all comes back to corporations trying to avoid accountability and public services or public administration trying to avoid paying for things that they feel has no ROI. Often the way in which government in the United States works is, you know, if we can get individuals to take more responsibility than we can, avoid having to administer easily solvable problems that don't carry for us a lot of incentive. Getting people back to baseline doesn't carry with it the same enticing ROI for a government or a corporation than being able to take people or systems or societies from good to excellent.
Next week, John will look at what drives our preoccupation with trucks and SUVs. John's story today really drives home the point that the primary responsibility always rests with the customer, the end consumer, the person who pays for the privilege. So let's play that game, what if, for a moment. What if the manufacturers had taken a different tact? What if they had less packaging or compostable packaging as part of their operational mandate to begin with? What if they made it part of their mandate today? The truth is, we are all living with the unintended consequences of actions we have collectively taken over the last 100 years or so. And most of us are shaking our heads going, why did we do such stupid things? And wouldn't it be nice to do a do-over? But you and I both know that do-overs are a fantasy. We can't do them. The only thing we can do now is a do-better. And that do-better absolutely must be in the highest good for all.